south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, we often talk about business ideas for expats and gringos here in Latin America because so many of us end up, well, doing business. And you know, a certain percentage of gringos and expats come down working on that plan B, and they only have a limited amount of funds, and they know sooner or later it's going to run out, and they're going to have to do something. So, for example, if you're single and you come down with, let's say, $5,000 or $10,000, if you know how to work it, you'll be able to last a year or so, but what then? Obviously, for lots of gringos and expats, that treadmill first world stress is translated to a certain kind of third world stress when you know the clock is ticking on your nest egg and you got to find something. But, surprisingly enough, or maybe it's not so surprising, once you're down here, especially if you're off the gringo tourist trail or slightly off the trail, those business ideas that you never had up in the States, because all the niches were filled, will pop into your head like crazy. At least that's what it's done for so many, even average gringos. Though I have to say, very few truly average people end up coming to Latin America or even think about a plan B, because average people are just punching their time clocks and living for the weekend up in the States, just trying to make ends meet, rooting for the home team, and thinking that's the way it's always going to be. So the fact is, most gringos and expats who end up here in Latin America are truly above average, so they got the edge on everyone when it comes to business too, right? I mean, look, that's what being above average is all about. You're just a little better at most things than the average slug. Then there's the fact that the average slug up in the States is a lot more educated and astute than the average slug here in Latin America, so you've got a kind of multiplier effect. And that's why you'll see, even with the majority of people coming down to Latin America with a small nest egg, let's say $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, eventually, and some rather quickly, find a business niche. And soon enough, often very quickly, they're off and running. Then there's the fact that startup costs here in Latin America are a fraction of what they are up in the States for whatever kind of business you're planning. If you're doing brick and mortar, rents are half again as cheap or less. You rarely need to carry insurance. Salaries are a fifth of what you'd pay up in the States, and if you're situated in the right climate, like the Altiplano, you won't have air conditioning bills either. And as far as government permits and stamps and seals, it may seem like you're beating your head against the wall for the first month or so, but once you've got that stuff in order, and you really need a lawyer to do it, because even if you speak Spanish, it's almost impossible to fight your way through the red tape. But once you're there and you've got all the permisos, those fat-ass slugs in government will almost never bother you again. And if you have an internet business, or mostly internet business, man, that's the way to go. Then you can usually run it from your own home office sitting in your underwear. But you knew that already, right? Now, you've heard me say 100 times it's difficult to get a business going when you're smack on the gringo tourist trail because you've got all that gringo competition. But then again, gringos, expats, and tourists are pretty demanding. And if there's a niche that you can fill, that's a great way to get a business started too. But you have to find that niche somehow, right? And normally, when you stumble on a niche that needs to be filled on the gringo tourist trail, you'll find it rarely translates to the people in local Latin society. In other words, it's rare that the local Latinos will be your clients. For example, I remember about 15 years ago, a gringo was in Panama and he said, "Hey, I know, I'll start a paintball park. Why not? It's big in the States with the kids and adolescents." And my friend had a kind of a crap piece of land outside of Panama City, kind of scruffy. So he set up this paintball park. Guess what? Went bust in 1 year. Why? Because back then anyway, it was something gringos, only kind of young male gringos, know about and would appreciate. Sure, there were plenty of young adult Latinos and adolescents around who would love to do paintball, but they didn't know what it was, and it wasn't cheap by their standards, so they just didn't turn out. Now, maybe if he would have put a paintball park in Costa Rica smack dab on the tourist trail, he'd have done fine. Because in places like Costa Rica, where tourism is king, there's always a continuous flow of young adults and adolescent partiers looking for something to do, besides drinking, surfing, and hanging out at the beach. Oh, and that reminds me, gringos often send me emails explaining what they think is a good gringo business idea, like this one. Comes from Bobby, says, "Johnny, I was thinking of a great business opportunity for the right person in running a home EMF radiation detection business. especially with 5G about to be rolled out. Meters are pretty inexpensive and fairly accurate, and various techie sites seem to favor this one. Then he sent me a link to an EMF meter, you know, measures stray frequencies and the power of those frequencies around the house. Yeah, being an engineer, I know about those things, and good quality EMF meters run a couple of $100 usually. Then he says, Johnny, I think a business like this would be easy to promote since so many home devices also emit pretty strong electric fields. Amazingly, folks will still put a Wi-Fi baby monitor right next to their baby's bed or sit with the Wi-Fi antenna right next to their computer stations, etc., etc. And if you're a gringo in the know, you know this is not good for you. So you can set up a business and advertise that you'll go to a person's house and see if they've got some EMF hotspots and provide some avoidance strategies, like how to keep street-side 5G antennas from frying your brain while you're lounging on your veranda in your underwear, watching a beautiful sunset, umbrella drink in hand. All right, that one came in from Bob G, as opposed to 5G. My take on it, Bob, it's a great idea, but you're way ahead of your time. You know, the problem is, even the smartest gringos and expats I know aren't really concerned with dirty EMF and the coming of 5G, which is really going to be dirty and damaging. Hey, don't get me wrong. I'm with you all the way. I think 5G is going to be a disaster in the making and a ticking time bomb. And I know even with 4G and smartphones, as they are right now, are causing a lot of harm. The fact is, we're all just guinea pigs in one big worldwide experiment. And the makers of cell phones and Wi-Fi devices know that. I think you heard me mention on a past show, but if people would bother to read the instructions, warnings, and cautions that come with smartphones, each and every one of them says somewhere in the fine print, do not hold this device close to your skin. Say, what? As Tony Soprano would have said, you gotta be shitting me. And you know why it's in there, right? It's their legal loophole against individual or class action lawsuits that they know are surely coming. You know, speaking of Wi-Fi and baby monitors, did you know that you could buy baby diapers with a Wi-Fi chip that has a moisture sensor and signals you when the baby's peed? And they even have, get this, GPS Wi-Fi in baby pacifiers, because, you know, kids are losing those all the time. You'll definitely have to download the app and locate the thing before the screaming brat blows an artery. Makes you wonder how we ever survived without the internet, huh? Well, maybe society deserves to fry itself. That's right, humans are known for doing stupid things they're very sorry for later. Like, for example, when there were factories full of ladies using radium-tainted paint on watch dials so they'd glow in the dark. And after a while, nearly every one of those women got cancer. But hey, if you woke up at 2 in the morning, you'd know what time it was. And then you had all those decades long ago when manufacturers put lead oxide in white paint. Problem was, lead in the paint had a slight sweet taste to it. So as it weathered, blistered, and peeled off, as most paints will with time, kids would eat it. The result? Brain damage. The survivors? Some ended up in institutions, and the rest? In Congress. But you knew that already, right? So, bottom line, Bob, an EMF radiation detection business? Good idea, whose time has not yet come. Because, you know, I don't think even the gringo and expat population is educated enough to buy into it, much less the locals, who I guarantee don't know the difference between 3G, 4G, 5G, or a G-string. By the way, do you know what the G stands for? Generation. Third generation, fourth generation, fifth generation. And the G in the G-string? Well, I don't know about that, but I do know it's the fourth string on a guitar. Speaking of G-strings, I just have to tell you this boots on the ground story. You know, I've been in Colombia lately, and since occasionally I am a nice guy and I help people out, sometimes for nothing, sometimes for a cup of coffee, and sometimes, well, could be anything. That said, you know, I get a lot of pleas for help from gringos and expats who do not speak Spanish. They've hit a roadblock, they're flummoxed, and they say, Johnny, can you help me out? Well, the other day, turns out, I helped out this 40-something gringa who was looking to get some Botox done in Medellin, Colombia. And, you know, being in the Poblado gringoized district, there's lots of cosmetic clinics to choose from. So early on a Monday morning, around 9:30, we walked into this aesthetic clinic, took our seats in the waiting room, and there were around 10 remaining unoccupied seats. Funny thing was, at the other end of the room, there were 6 ladies standing, just mulling around, talking, but not sitting. And these were chicas ricas, upscale ladies, too. All of them clicking away on the latest iPhones, casual clothes and gym outfits, but designer casual clothes and gym outfits. Unbeknownst to me, as it turns out, surprise, surprise, Monday morning in this doctor's office is butt check day. Turns out all these wealthy ladies standing around had butt implants the week before, and they were all in for their first post-surgery checkup. So then why were they mulling around and not just simply lounging around on the leather sofas, plunking away at their iPhones? Because you see, as one of them told me, if you have a butt job, you can't sit down for a week, and you have to sleep boca abajo, which means face down on your stomach. And man, were these ladies quejonas, which means complainers. Not about the surgery, but the fact that they had to wear these really tight corsets, sleep on their stomach, and they couldn't sit down. Now, here's the cool thing about gringos being able to speak Spanish. You see, the average Latino and Latina population, they don't think any of us gringos can. So, they'll just blather away in Spanish as if you weren't there. Meanwhile, you're sucking in all that great and sometimes intimate information, like I do, to use on this show. And believe me, these ladies were blathering away. And what do you think they were talking about? Well, for one, they were comparing each other's surgeries, exhibiting their symptoms and their bruises, and complaining about their pain, their fajas, that would be those form-fit girdles you have to wear after an operation like that, and what a pain in the ass it was to carry around a drain. And I'm thinking, what? A drain? That's when I saw that every last one of those ladies was carrying a little handbag with a plastic tube that ran from somewhere under that form-fit corset into her purse. And then one of the ladies opened her purse and whipped out a little bag full of bloody liquid. She showed it to the receptionist and said, "I think there's something wrong with my drain. Is my liquid supposed to be this color?" The receptionist slash nurse said, "Yeah, that's normal." Now, I have to tell you, as usual, the doctor was on mañana time. So me, the gringa I came with, and these newly big-bottomed ladies were stuck in that reception room for at least an hour. And then an amazing thing happened. All of them, every last one of them, decided to show each other their drainage bags, and they pulled them out of their purses and compared notes and colors and consistency and such. Then one of them started stripping down in front of me. She said she had an itch and she just couldn't stand the corset anymore. Seems doctor's orders were not to remove the corset till they came back to the office a full week after the surgery. Let me tell you, this lady was at the end of her rope. She was climbing up the walls, and she did not care that I was standing right there watching everything she did. But I guess after you had boobs, lipo, and your butt done, and you've worn the same undergarments for a week, anything goes. You're definitely not too picky or timid as to who you reveal your body parts to, even to strangers. And the object of that exercise? To scratch the places that needed itching and to show the other ladies all the bruises that ran up and down her legs. You know, big blue and red hematomas. And then they all started exhibiting their symptoms. And these were ladies who didn't even know each other. But by the time the doctor came, they'd exchanged WhatsApp numbers and shown each other before and after photos. And like a bunch of jarheads going through boot camp, they were all best friends and butt buddies. Oh, and I have to tell you, their age ranges were all over the place. The youngest one, 23, and the oldest, 52. Now remember, all the while I'm standing there, but it's like I don't exist because they don't think I can speak Spanish. Then they started comparing implant sizes. They were tossing out numbers like 300 cc's, 400, 600 cc's. And then somehow one of those cloth tape measures appeared, and they were comparing waist and butt circumferences. And let me tell you, this place was hourglass central. And man, I wish I'd have had a hidden camera because this would have been a great YouTube video. I'm sure it would have gone viral. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, one of the ladies had a kind of an ace bandage wrapped around her head like in the old movies where someone has a toothache. Turns out, along with her butt enhancement, she had the fat sucked out of her face. Of course, everyone got to see the before and afters, even me. But little did they know, all those intimate boob and butt shots they were passing around on WhatsApp are in the Google Cloud, and you know what that means. And then the doctor walked in. And my gringa friend I was giving a little assist to, he gave her 50 units of Botox, cost $200. And if you're wondering if it was the real thing, you know, the certified Botox from the original manufacturer, not a Chinese knockoff. Well, as it turns out, we sat in the doctor's office for an extra 10 minutes waiting for a little guy to show up in a motorcycle with a cold pack. It was like he was delivering a body part for an organ transplant. Nice presentation, all iced up. So do the math. 50 units of Botox, $200. That's $4 a unit. In the States, $15 to $20 a unit. That's $200 versus around $600 to $1,000 up in the States. Plus, I guarantee if you have it done up in the States, the people in the waiting room will be no way as entertaining or fun. Latin ladies, they let it all hang out. And gringas? Well, I've got sisters and they've had some work done. Let's put it this way. For Latina ladies, it's kind of a badge of honor and they're more than willing to admit it if the subject comes up. But American girls like my sisters, Well, let's just say they lie a lot. Remember that old saying, women are allowed to lie about their age, weight, and height? And guys, the size of their schwants and their income? Well, in the States, for women, you could add plastic surgery to that list. The proof of that is, when you're in the States, you almost never see anyone, any woman anyway, with a telltale nose job bandage on her face unless she's coming directly from the doctor. Nope, she'll barricade herself behind closed doors till the bandage and the swelling's gone. But here in Latin America, that telltale nose job band-aid is a badge of honor. Just like having braces here in Latin America. It's a sign of affluence, of wealth, of moving on up socially and economically. Because just a few years back, only the rich could afford it. Now, since everyone's on the payment plan, middle class and some lower middle class Latinas are getting bracketed up. And you know what Latin dentists are saying? Many of these young Latina girls, and some of them aren't so young, they want to keep their braces on indefinitely. Say what? Oh, and Latin dentists will also tell you, Latina girls and ladies are 10 times as likely to have braces than the males. So does that mean the women here are born with the bad luck of having more crooked teeth than men? No way. Braces here in Latin America serve two functions, to straighten teeth and to prove that you can afford to have your teeth straightened. That's why so many middle and lower middle class ladies want to keep their braces indefinitely. Man, is that not completely opposite of the way it was when we were kids? From day one, it was a countdown to when you could get the damn things off. Go figure, huh? Speaking of figures, hourglass figures, if you heard my last show, I mentioned I figured I'd get some hate mail. Well, I surely got mail, all right. Not much hate mail, but lots of mail. Man, did that show hit a nerve, and some other things too, especially with the guys. The mail is still piling in about that show. I did have a few American and Canadian ladies complain about all the painful things women have to go through to be beautiful for men. The high heels, the hair, the dough spent for various treatments at the massage and beauty parlors, and of course, the plastic surgery. But you know, in many cases it comes down to the fact that women do all that stuff, not completely for the guys, though there's lots of media pressure, but more because they're in competition with each other. But you knew that already, right? So then you might ask, what kind of emails have I been getting on the subject? How about this one from Dave? He says, Johnny, thanks for your contribution to science. You ought to get a Nobel Prize. Well, Dave, I'll take the money. I think it's like $1.2 million for a Nobel now. However, I'd rather not be in the company of that former liar-in-chief, O'Vomit. Then Dave says, Johnny, classifying Latinas and talking about mating and dating, it's a tough job, as they say, but someone has to do it. I must admit, doing some of my own informal research in Colombia over a cup of Juan Valdez coffee. You see, someone remembers Juan Valdez. All right, me, Johnny here. Speaking of Juan Valdez, I remember as a kid watching Cub games on WGN with Jack Brickhouse and Harry Carey doing the play-by-play, and between innings, they'd toss in a few Juan Valdez commercials that, along with Maxwell House, Mrs. Olsen, and Hills Brothers, advertising what we know now as Rot Gut Coffee. But how did we know? Well, thank God for Juan Valdez. He beat the crap out of those domestic brands. Because, you know, it really took till Starbucks came, probably in the 80s, that we realized that coffee actually had to be fresh, ground, and roasted within a month or so of picking. Meanwhile, our mothers bought those giant tins of Hills Brothers and Maxwell House that were sitting on the grocery store shelves for, who knows, years. Pre-ground and dry as a bone, too. Remember those days? Now, I'm no fan of Starbucks, but they did give us up in the States a kind of cultural nudge in the right direction. Ever since then, the correct way to do coffee has really taken off. And lately, one of the amazing things I've noticed about Latin America is these really cool automated coffee machines are popping up everywhere. You put your dough in, usually 50 cents or a buck, and it automatically grinds the beans in front of you right there and brews the coffee. And it tastes damn good, not like out of one of those restaurant drip bun machines. That's like drinking campfire cowboy coffee. Now, I imagine you see those machines up in the States these days. That I'm not talking about those special Italian jobs that seem to be all the rage today. One brand I remember is called Nespresso or something like that. You know, you got to buy those special pod-like mini hockey pucks, and they're expensive. I've tried them, and the coffee's really good, but you're forever a slave to buying those pods. But anyway, as it turns out, there's another kind of machine I'm finding all over the place here in Latin America now. They brew a great cup of coffee because they're grinding the beans right there and running them through a kind of an espresso press. Problem is, what happens to those machines down the line? How do you clean those things and who's cleaning them? Because the word maintenance barely exists in the Spanish language. But I digress. Not too much, though. Anyway, getting back to Dave's email. Just one of a ton of emails I've gotten on the subject since I began talking about curvy Latin girls. He said, Johnny, I did some of my own informal research in Medellin, Bogota, and other places. whilst sipping a cup of Juan Valdez at a high-end food court. He said a very good spot for girl watching is to place yourself near the entrance and exit of an escalator. Then he says, Johnny, I must concur with your conclusions on which Latinas are the curviest and have the nicest hourglass figures. Although it's been many years since I visited Venezuela myself, I concur. All right, meet Johnny here for a second. If you remember, in last week's show, I put Venezuela on the list as number one. That is for Latinas in the hourglass figure department. Then he says, I do have a few Venezuelan friends up here in Gringolandia, and they prove that point, too. Then he says, Johnny, I found out when it comes to Colombia, a woman's shape can vary greatly depending on the region she is from. In Bogota, for example, many of the women have very flat behinds. On the coast, like Barranquilla and Cartagena, the women tend to be much curvier. In Medellin and Cali, the women can be quite curvy, but tend to be much more surgically enhanced. Now, curves, he said, are things that are relatively objective. But how about some research to do, Johnny, on a few subjective questions, like, which Latinas are actually the sexiest? Man, that is subjective. In my opinion, and I've been to these countries, my take is the top four are Brazil, Dominican Republic, Colombia, and Venezuela. Then he says, to be honest, Johnny, I find all four countries have very sexy women. There are no losers there. Then he says, how about rating them for beauty? That's not necessarily sexy, but which Latinas do you think are most beautiful? Here's my take. Venezuela, Colombia, Brazil, DR. The same four. Then he says, from what I've heard, Argentina should be in there somewhere, but I've never been there, so I don't know. Then he says, a survey should be done as to which Latinas have the best personalities suited for gringos. Hey, now, there's a good question. Then he says, the objective would be to wrap those questions and answers into a determination of which Latinas make the best wives for gringos. Would be a combination of various factors, of course. But I'd say, and this is him talking again, Colombia, Venezuela, and again, I'm thinking Peru or Chile. He says, what's your opinion, Johnny, and why go through all this? Why? Because inquiring minds need to know. Then he finishes by saying, thanks, Johnny, as always, for the great info and entertainment. Signed, yet another Dave. All right, so with all the emails and massive interest I've had in this subject, I could go on forever, but I'm not. I just can't do it because this show is about living, playing, working, and or retiring in Latin America. It's not a show on how to pick up Latin guys and girls. Of course, we'll touch on the subject here and there, but man, when it comes to mating, dating, love, and romance between gringos and Latinas and gringas and Latinos, that needs a whole continuing series of shows in itself. And yes, I could very well be the guy to host that show, but I think I'll put that on the back burner till someone or some production company makes me an offer I can't refuse. All right, I'm going to jack the transmission in reverse here and talk about something completely different. You know, I get people asking me questions about drugs here in Latin America, too, as far as what's legal, what's not, what you can get away with. If you get caught with some stuff, do they treat locals differently than gringos? Do the cops let you go? Do they take your stash? Do they give it back? Do they fine you? Or do they perhaps party with you? Well, those are things I touched on briefly in some past shows, but I'm going to go over all of that again on an upcoming show, so stay tuned. But I will tell you this, Latinos are confounded that the U.S. is legalizing marijuana, and Canada's done it too. And one by one, Latin countries are decriminalizing it, and Mexico has got on the ballot right now to make it legal altogether, which is an excellent move for a lot of obvious reasons. So anyway, Latinos are starting to realize that up in the States, marijuana's legal, or at least quasi-legal, almost everywhere. Which, of course, means if this had happened sooner, Cheech and Chong would be pumping gas or working at a pet store because they never would have had a career. Which, oddly enough, brings me to a wedding video that my brother just sent me. He's at the reception, in the parking lot at a Sheraton hotel, and everybody's in tuxes and dresses and stuff, just mulling around. So he's taking this video, and he walks past some old guys and gals in their 70s and 80s. These were uncles and aunts, great uncles and aunts, too, and friends of the bride and groom. They're all formally dressed, some of them in tuxedos and stuff, and they're smoking big fat doobies. And for me, it was just a strange thing to see that. Sure, you expect that kind of partying with high school and college kids, but still, not out in the open like that. Crazier yet, you're talking about very well-dressed, well-established professionals in their 70s and 80s, token up, laughing their asses off, having a great time. It really is something that kind of throws you for a second. But then again, they are the original Woodstock generation. They were in university during the flower power days. Still, it's so hard to get used to the fact that it's legal. But still, I'd be willing to bet if I was back in Chicago right now and someone handed me a joint, I'd be looking around thinking, You sure this is all right? Which brings me to my favorite personal pot story. You know, all my life, strange things have happened to me, so I think you might like this story. When I was in undergrad engineering school, I played in a locally famous rock band, and I worked nights at a store called Kohl's, too. You may have heard of Kohl's department store. This was Kohl's food store, like a Walmart. I worked a night shift with 8 or 10 other guys, stocking shelves at night from 9 p.m. to 1 in the morning. We were a pretty young crew, most of us going to university or tech school. But the night manager, a guy we called Turkey, was a lifer there, and he was a stiff, straight arrow and would do anything to brown-nose his way up. And each day, we'd have our break at 11 at night, and we'd go up to the boiler room, have a snack or a sandwich, and oftentimes, Turkey, the manager, would take off in his car for an hour, go home or whatever. And when he came back, sometimes he would sniff around and say, "Hey, was someone smoking pot?" Now, at least two or three guys in the group were burners, and they did toke up in the boiler room when we were all on break, as long as Turkey wasn't around. Now, I'd been working there maybe a year and a half by then. As for me, I was never into drugs. I never bought pot in my life. Though being in a band, it was everywhere. Pot just made me tired, and I needed the energy. I went to school, played in a band, and I was working at Kohl's. I'd take a hit once in a while when people passed it around, but it was never a routine thing with me. Anyway, one day we're all up in the boiler room, Turkey's gone, and wham, the door flung open and three cops walked in, followed by Turkey and the senior day manager. He said, "You're all fired and these cops are going to book you." Well, you know, that scared the hell out of me. I was thinking, uh-oh, there goes my scholarship. Then the cops proceeded to interview us one by one, trying to find out whose stuff it was, where they bought it, the usual drill. And at that point, everybody knew they were fired, so one of the instigators, a burner, started to get wise with the cops. However, when they interviewed me, I said I wasn't smoking. And by luck, that day I'd received my report card grades, and I pulled them out and showed them to the cops. All A's. I had a 4 point that semester. And I said to the cops and the manager, "Is this the report card of a stoner?" All right, then, after they interviewed everyone, they made an announcement they were going to fire everyone except me. And the guys in the crew hated me for it. Crazier yet, when the cops said they wanted to press charges because they had a bag of weed, one of the instigators said to the cops in front of all of us, "You press charges on us, I'm going to the Chicago Trib. I'm going to tell them we were running a drug ring out of this Kohl's store." He said, "I bet all the old neighborhood ladies will never come in to buy a gallon of milk again." The bluff worked. They didn't press charges. But even years later, when I'd run into some of those guys, I'd get the, "Hi, Johnny, how's it going?" But with very little enthusiasm. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.